Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Cooper, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. Travis Ryer joining along from overseas, as a matter of fact, long distance edition of Talking Tide at a little bit of an awkward time here in mid-afternoon central time on a Monday. Not at all mid-afternoon where Travis is, but we recap Alabama's narrow win over South Carolina in this edition of Talking Tide, 27-25, of course, the final score. We will go around the SEC. We will touch on Alabama's upcoming rivalry tilt against the Tennessee Vols as well. But, Travis, this was one of those games for me, Travis, where when I think ahead to the podcast after the game, all I could think about is – all of the situational crap that you kind of got to get through, or you feel like you really didn't cover the game at all before you even begin talking about bigger picture stuff. But situationally in this game, just stuff left and right to dive into, whether it be Damani Jackson's interception at the end or the Jeremy Bernard score that came near the end, the clock management and situational management toward the end of halftime. I mean, you could have 20 fingers instead of 10 and not point to it all.
Yeah. And you being a columnist, you know, you got to kind of encapsulate all this within a certain amount of space. And that was almost impossible to do with
the middle eight, the middle eight I wrote about. I'm not the one that's been talking about the middle eight. That's been Kalen DeBoer's mention here the last couple of weeks, but I figure, yeah, let's talk middle eight with my column coming out.
And I mean, all three phases too, right? I mean, as you said, situational football, really complimentary football too. We just haven't seen that as much from this Alabama team. Didn't really see it enough a year ago either, but for different reasons. Kind of reversed this year. Last year, you felt like at least defensively you could hang in there pretty well. And if you had an opportunity, you could close out games. This year, you kind of feel the other way around. But hey, end of the day, it's a 2-point win. You're right. I mean, we can go into the Bernard touchdown. You know, I didn't have that much of a problem with it. You're not wrong if you felt like he should have fallen down. You're not wrong. But at that point, you're going to be up eight with a minimal amount of time against this South Carolina offense that doesn't have sort of the Steve Spurrier type of pieces to it. You figure you're going to be able to hang on there. Still was dicey after that. You said it, situational football. Can't cover an onside kick late. Offensively, you had chances to probably close the game out or at least get back in command of the game. You throw a red zone pick with a veteran quarterback. Just multiple ways to lose a football game as a 20-plus point favorite at home. Alabama pretty much checked all those boxes, but here they are at 5-1 anyway.
They did. They did. A couple of quick thoughts on the Jackson interception that ended the game and the Bernard touchdown that probably should have ended the game, right? One key difference between those two plays is, I think, one, and just for, you know, my thought on, I agree with you. Yeah, I don't blame Jeremy Bernard for not, you know, for not going down, getting out of bounds, whatever. The player's mentality, of course, is going to be to score. The Damani Jackson play, the way I've read it, I thought his momentum was taking him in the end zone. I don't think it would have been called a safety. At the same time, I hear the fan, you know, when the fans say, look, you don't want to put that in the official's lap, right? You don't want to put a judgment call like that in the hands of the officials. I understand that too. But one key difference between those two plays is, in one situation, it's about coaching. The other situation, it's about knowing the rule, right? With the Jeremy Bernard situation, well, he either needs to be told get down or not. Whatever you think should have happened there, it's got to come from the staff, right? Damani Jackson, on the other hand, yeah, understanding the rules ultimately comes from the staff too. But you'd like to think that if you want a Damani, let me back up a second. you don't want to have to remind Damani Jackson or anybody else what any rule is, right? You'd like to think that that's ingrained throughout your career at the college level, as opposed to a situational deal like Bernard, where the question has less to do with a rule and more to do with what do we want to do in this spot.
Yeah, and my initial reaction to the Damani Jackson play, and I said it here on the channel post-game Saturday evening, was that I felt like at first glance he was clearly okay with kneeling the ball down in the end zone. Now, when you slow it down, you start to wonder if he didn't establish some possession. Did the official throw the bean bag, kind of marking where possession had taken place? So I get it from that perspective too. It was just, you know, another bizarre sort of Saturday for Alabama football after won the previous week in Nashville. So the question becomes, more so 6 games into the season, when does this team kind of find its legs in terms of consistency in really all three phases of the game and reliability in some areas? So I didn't think that we would necessarily have everything answered with this team midway through the season, especially on defense because of all the changes in the secondary and some of the question marks elsewhere. But even offensively now, you know, coming out of that performance, you have a few questions, but it makes for a very interesting third Saturday in October coming up in Knoxville, because I think when you look at Tennessee, this is a team that's got some of the same questions of its own at this point in the season.
No doubt. And I think if we were talking about a Nick Saban team, you get to the midway point of the season and you say, okay, you are what you are, right? Because the staff's in play, the defense is in place. I understand Nick Saban had his share of turnover at the offensive coordinator spot, but a Nick Saban team with the way that program had been established halfway through the season, whatever problems you see, you expect to see the rest of the year. With a brand new staff, maybe you get to the halfway point of the season and say, okay, this thing's still a little malleable, right? This thing still could improve. You know, maybe this team can establish some permanent improvement down the stretch here that maybe, you know, with a Saban team, you'd think, all right, they are what they are. But still, a lot of mistakes. Most of these issues on the defensive side of the ball, a lot of issues getting off the field. South Carolina with that 8-plus-minute drive to open the second half. Big problem for Kane Womack. A lot of third and shorts, you know, bringing up third and one, third and two situations where it's just not that hard to convert. And then if you don't get it, a lot of fourth and shorts. And Alabama has been stuck on the wrong end of some fourth and shorts as well. Got to go back to the onside kick, though, real quick, Travis, just to stay on the situational side of things. Get the linebackers off the field on the hands team. I don't get that. I understand that you need a couple of bigs on the hands team to be physical, right? Because an onside kick is a physical play.
That initial wave that you've got to encounter, which has been minimized in recent years.
It has. For the sake of safety. To me, the only bigs that need to be on the front on the hands team are tight ends. That's it. Get the linebackers out of there. And it ended up that, you know, I think the three linebackers that were on the field were Q Robinson, Campbell, and Lawson. The onside kick didn't touch any of them. Ended up going off of, I think, Quavis and Utes. But it could have gone off a linebacker real easy. I don't know. To me, Travis, you put a linebacker on the hands team, you're asking for trouble.
It was, first of all, kudos to South Carolina. That was a well-executed kick. Don't want to short them there. But absolutely, I kept waiting for a wide receiver to appear in that play. I do think there is sort of a capacity in terms of linebackers and tight ends. So I'm sure that's something they've studied this week in terms of personnel. But again, just you're in position. Quavis, I wouldn't say he's Travis Kelce as far as tight ends go, but I've seen him catch enough balls at this point to think that it's a play he should be able to make. Now, you know, when the second guy's a tight end too, that's more of a brute inline fullback type, you don't have as much confidence there. But initially I felt like Quavis would be okay. It's a stressful football team the last couple of weeks, really the last 10 quarters. You go back to the start of the third quarter of the Georgia game, said this post game Saturday too. I mean, when you really think about everything that's gone down since the start of the second half of the Georgia game, 2-1 for this team right now through those 10 quarters looks pretty damn good. But again, if you asked a lot of Alabama fans preseason, this team's going to be 5-1 through six. I don't think there would be a ton of surprise. The surprise, really the shock, would come that, yeah, but the one isn't going to be against Georgia, not even going to be against, let's say, Wisconsin on the road. It's going to be Vanderbilt. That's where it would have taken a lot of Alabama fans, aback. And so you talk about third downs, man. That's going to be everything this week too, because, you know, Alabama, when you look at the SEC rankings right now for opponents' third down conversions for all games, it looks pretty good. They're like top five or so in the SEC. But when you look at Alabama just in SEC play, where third down conversions allowed are concerned, they're 15th in the SEC in just conference games. And Tennessee's similar on offense. Tennessee is, you know, top half of the SEC in third down conversions offensively, but then just in SEC play, Tennessee's 15th when it comes to converting on those plays. So I don't think we're going to have to go far probably after Saturday's game in Knoxville to kind of figure out how this one went.
No, something's got to give. The Tennessee offense, which was expected to be and looked like kind of a juggernaut at the beginning of the season, has really taken a step backwards here in conference play. I think Iamaleva's only thrown one touchdown pass in SEC action. Travis hadn't thrown for 200 yards yet in an SEC game. Tennessee defense seems to come to play every week. I don't think Tennessee fans came into the season expecting that the defense would have to carry them some Saturdays. But of late, that's how it's been.
It's absolutely been that way. And now the Tennessee defense loses a big piece against Florida last Saturday night with Keenan Peely, the outstanding linebacker and also a defensive captain, a team captain. So he's out for the year now with an ACL. That was a tough game for ACLs, that Florida-Tennessee game, because Graham Mertz, the Florida quarterback, went out for the season with a knee injury as well. But your boy Unknown Damone, he's not happy about the 10 players of the game after South Carolina. We had 10 players of the game. 10, he said. Now, look, some of those are scout team guys too, right? I mean, look, you know, you can't throw the scout guys under the bus, you know, but he's not really happy about that. Chris Williams chiming in here in the chat says, well, he's actually got an Auburn player. He's got Chris Davis in his.
Yeah. What's that about? Right.
So maybe Chris isn't necessarily an Alabama fan. Maybe we've kind of figured out Chris there. He says this team has taken years off my life. And Ricky Smith, boy, it's a sort of defeatist attitude in the chat today, Chase. Ricky Smith says we will lose some get more games like Tennessee, LSU, Oklahoma, and Auburn. Wow. 7-5. Now, you know, like we said, who knows? Time to time, you'll have some trolls in that show chat.
It'll happen. You know, It'll happen. Yeah. But that said, Alabama's got to straighten some things out on the defensive side of the football quickly. And stopping the run is central to that. Kane Womack touched on that this morning at his news conference. I asked him about running dime against Tennessee because that's how Arkansas beat Tennessee, right? They won that game 19-14 a couple of weeks ago. They ran dime all game. I think it was like a 3-2-6 alignment for the Razorbacks that got the job done. And we've talked about this on the pod. We haven't seen any dime from Kane Womack. So I tried to pin him down on that a little bit, and His answer in essence was, look, this team is spreading you out to try to run it. And if we're going to stop the run, we need to stay true to who we are, which I took to mean stay in the nickel.
Yeah, they are. And look, I see it both ways. I think there are times when having some semblance of a six defensive back look could be beneficial. But he's not the only guy in college football that's pretty much going dimeless. You know, I've studied Notre Dame in the past. I've studied Clemson in the past. Very nickel heavy teams in college football. And he's also right that Tennessee does spread you out. I mean, ultimately, if they can get on early downs with Dylan Sampson, what Vandy was able to get, and then South Carolina this last week, as you talked about earlier, and I talked about after the game too, we can talk about third down conversions all we want. But if you're not good enough on early downs, a lot of teams are going to convert thirds against you. So if they're not exceptional or improved a good bit on the early downs and make it more third and five, third and six, because you can get into Nico's head. I think we've seen that not just against Arkansas and even against Florida last week. I think Oklahoma did it as well. But you got to make Tennessee uncomfortable in terms of down and distance. And Alabama is just not doing that enough against the likes of Vanderbilt or South Carolina. So Tennessee may be looking at this Alabama defense as, hey, this is a chance for us to get well, which you would never think about that, you know, in some previous years.
No, you wouldn't. And I think Alabama would really be well served to get Aimalava moved off the spot. I don't think he's as effective as a passer on the move. I haven't seen any next gen stats on that, any high tech analytics on that, but just to the eyeball test for me. And he's athletic and he can hurt you if he decides to tuck it. He can get, it's not like he can't avoid the rush. He can. The guy's got some wheels, no doubt about it, but I don't think he's nearly as effective as a thrower when he's on the run. And I'm not so sure he likes to tuck it and go across the line of scrimmage on his own. He can do it. He's dangerous, but I think if Alabama can get him kind of off the spot and out of the pocket, they're generally going to be better off than not.
Yeah. And tempo is everything with Tennessee, right? Pace offensively. So that goes back to early down success. If you can get Tennessee off schedule, then you have a chance to slow them down literally in terms of how fast they like to go. Put them in some third and longs where they have to kind of do some things maybe personnel-wise to get what they need on the field in those situations. If they're in third and three, third and four all game, they never need to sub really, and that doesn't allow you to sub. If that's something you actually want to do, I guess that is a benefit though of Kane's approach. He's a nickel guy all the time. So, you know, that's what made kind of Malachi Moore's comments about getting the calls in quicker. Here recently, he had that comment about the defense and it's like, well, it's not like you're by the amateur's eye anyway. You're doing things from a personnel perspective that could make that tough. The call should be the call, because personnel wise, a lot of times you're just with the same people. I understand there are personnel changes on third and long within the nickel and getting pass rush guys on, getting coverage guys on the field. I get all that. But again, I think it goes back to first and second down this week, you know, and then when you get to third down, my question to you right now, Chase, when you look at this Alabama defense, who's the closer on this Alabama defense? Where's the Will Anderson? Where's the Dallas Turner? You know, where's the Reuben Foster type? Who's that guy? Does Alabama have that guy right now? The guy that I talked about Saturday after the game as being as much of that as anything is maybe Q Robinson at this point. But in terms of, that's what I'm saying. Relative to what they've had when it's closing time.
Right.
And even in the secondary, I know Damani Jackson had a huge pick to close out the game last week. He also gave up the touchdown pass late in the fourth quarter. I give him a lot of credit. Got banged up, came back in, showed a lot of maturity, a lot of leadership, as we heard from Kalen earlier today. But just week in and week out, when Alabama needs it on defense, who's that guy right now?
And he's got to be whoever it is, whoever it turns into. Maybe it turns into nobody. Maybe they're kind of short that alpha dog all year. But if they're not, if one emerges, kind of has to come out of the front seven, right? Especially with the woes Alabama's had stopping the run. Can't really be Malachi Moore on third and one, right? It's got to be a dog up front. And it seems right when you think that guy might be emerging, it seems like there's a personal foul or something to just set the drive off in a new direction. And And I'm not seeing that right now at all on this Alabama defensive front. Some talented guys for sure. I think LT Overton's played some really good football for Alabama this year. We probably haven't talked about him quite enough, but I think he's brought a lot to the table. And the offseason with him was really pretty darn quiet, right? You didn't know what you were going to get from LT Overton, but he's looked good. I think if you between last year's defense and this year's defense, at least as a playmaker, I think he's maybe a little bit of an upgrade from a Justin Aboibe, for instance. But overall, too many guys missing gaps. You know, Kane Womack talked about eye discipline and some guys maybe just not watching the right things at the right times. Whatever the case may be, they've got to do better getting the run stopped and winning on those early downs. Set up those third and longs. You hit it. You doesn't matter how good you are on third down if you can hardly get – if you can't get the job done on first and second down. And early downs, they got to do a lot better.
Yeah, we talk about closers, but that doesn't mean you need a bunch of them. You don't need a lot of heroes because I think we've seen maybe too much of that from Alabama defensively, guys jumping gaps. And I understand this scheme is more about being disruptive. That's why I think a guy like LT Overton has shown up as much as he has in that regard. But you also got to finish plays, you know, and whether it's LT not finishing a play where it looks like he's in the gap in the hole and just can't, you know, do it himself. I said it after the game Saturday night. You've self-nicknamed this defense the Swarm. Where the hell are the helmets on a lot of plays? You know what I mean? Where's the Swarm? I'm ready to see more than one or two guys to the football. So
right.
And you know, to Kane's defense, still a new system. You know, and you got new guys coaching it too, right? Freddie Roach hasn't coached this in the past. So when you think about the defensive line, the thing that stands out to me, too, is the easy access to the perimeter that you see from opposing offenses, right? Whether it's the quarterback, just leverage on the quarterback just goes away, it seems like, very quickly. And quarterbacks just ease out of the pocket and get to where they want in space. So you're thinking, okay, three, maybe four-man pass rush. Certainly there's a linebacker or someone, a DB sitting in cloud or sky coverage that's going to come up and sort of speed things up.
Force the issue. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it happens all that much. So, you know, just trying to come up with some things that maybe make some sense for a defense that said this after the game. We see splash plays, right? And then we see these gaps of not nearly enough. And that's kind of going to be tough to work with when you look at what's coming up on the schedule.
Offensively for Alabama, Travis, we'll hit on that. Maybe go back to the South Carolina game just a bit on that. You know, I wrote after the game, I think Jalen Milrow, and we've talked about this on the pod some too. Nick Sheridan's going to be better off if he keeps Jalen Milrow involved in that running game with design runs and enough zone read type stuff to move the chains consistently. You still got to let Milrow throw the deep ball. Because that's one of the things he does best. You still got to have a diverse offense. I'm not saying shut it down and go three yards in a cloud of dust. But the more Milrow – look, when you look at when Alabama's successful offensively, Milrow running the football in some form or another is almost always a big part of it. You look at the drive Alabama put together in the second quarter against South Carolina for their second touchdown. They went 67 yards on that drive. 52 of those yards were on the ground. And Milrow got half of that 52 on the only explosive play you made on that drive. Come back in the second half, Travis. They pressed it a little bit more in the game with some Milrow runs. And he ripped off a couple of nine-yard runs on first down, set up a couple of second and shorts that you love if you're Nick Sheridan. And then they throw the pick in the end zone to kill that drive. But Milrow is hard to stop as a runner. They got to keep him as involved as they can.
What were a lot of Alabama fans clamoring for at this time last year? More design runs for Jalen Milrow, right?
Yeah.
A year later, he's getting them. And now what are we hearing? Got to get them running back some carries.
Right. Right.
You know, it's hard. The point being, it's hard to feed all the mouths, you know, but I'm 100% in agreement with you. The thing I like the most about the season opener, even against Western Kentucky, was that there was no hesitation in the red zone to get Jalen Milroe involved. I'm talking about quarterback buck sweep, quarterback draw, just straight up quarterback runs, not even off zone read, just run him, pull guards, get people out in front of him, and let him do what he's done to this point. When you talk about, what has he got now? 10 rushing touchdowns, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I thought 14, 15 was kind of his over under for the season. Hell, he's, you know, he's going to, at this rate, if he stays healthy, which is the concern, I think, when you look at the workload, because even at the end of the South Carolina game last Saturday, he didn't look like himself to me, you know, just in terms of his energy, and his twitch and things like that. He looked like maybe he was feeling the effects of a cumulative, perhaps, of the five games before it and some of the hits he took against South Carolina. Some of those he brought on himself. I thought it was interesting, too, listening to Nick Sheridan today when he was asked about the play of the offensive line and the sacks. And Nick Sheridan pretty much said he thought the protection was okay against South Carolina, which goes back to who? If the protection's okay and you're getting sacked four times,
Milroe.
I mean, without throwing him under the bus, and I don't think he was wrong. I mean, the safety, he absolutely was seeing more ghosts than I'm seeing tonight in this building from the 1500s behind me. You know, that was the safety to me was all Jalen, right? Yeah. Gave up on his protection, didn't need to, and paid the price for it. So, you know.
And I think we saw Jalen Milroe's, you called it energy level. There were times last year when I thought Milroe was up and down just in terms of how much spring was in his step, right? We saw him last year a couple times, maybe get a little gimpy, limp off here and there, stay in the game, keep playing, keep gutting it out. He's a tough, tough kid.
He is a tough kid. No one questions that.
Yeah, but last year, too, there were a couple games where you're like, he's not quite himself physically when he runs the ball. And then maybe a week later, he's got it back, and he kind of looks explosive all over again. That happened last year. I think we're seeing some of that happen again this year, too. But I think it's also, and, you know, wear and tear matters. There's no doubt. And the more you run him, the more physical pounding he's going to take. You also got to keep in mind, too, though, Travis, I think that from an injury perspective, I think, to me, it's just as dangerous to be in the pocket injury-wise as it is to be running that buck sweep, in some ways even more so, because when you're in the pocket – and you don't see it coming, especially if it's coming from behind.
Can't protect yourself.
Ankles, knees, yeah. That you can be out for the year just as easily, if not more easily, from the pocket as you can running it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The shot he took against Vanderbilt on the strip sack there in the fourth quarter, kind of a prime example of that. So, yeah, this is by no means – I talked about this after the game Saturday night too – I think some people look at one game and just a couple of situations even within the game and say, well, Milroe regressed. No, I mean, it's totally unfair to think that there aren't going to be some sequences and scenarios, perhaps even multiple of them in one game, where the quarterback doesn't show continued sign of progress. But what we had seen from Jalen pretty much through the first five games, especially delivering the football from the cup, had been notable, very notable improvement. Now, that's got to continue. If this team's going to go where it has to go, it's tough because Jalen's got to be that guy, I think. I mean, he's got weapons. Don't get me wrong. You need to continue to spread the football around. Yes, the running backs need to be involved. But when you need it the most in this last six-game stretch of this regular season, Jalen's going to have to be front and central in all of it, whether you're backed up at your own goal line, whether you're in the opponent's red zone. It's going to have to literally start and finish with the guy behind center.
Yeah, you talked a few minutes ago about how Alabama kind of needs to identify a closer on defense. Well, the closer on offense, no identification needed there. It's Jalen.
Yeah, I mean, that's him. That's him. And look, I think that's deserved at this point. Why wouldn't you look to do that with him? Obviously, if you can line up with Jam Miller and Justice Haynes and just run split zone 40 times a game, that would be great. But, you know, defenses aren't going to let you do that. And whereas you look at teams and the names on their jerseys, the teams on their jerseys and think South Carolina, South Carolina's not any good. Well, there are still units within these teams that you don't think are very good that are still really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, South Carolina up front is pretty damn good, you know. And then there's going to be other teams that you think are just great across the board that maybe aren't as much. I think Alabama's one of those teams right now. I mean, it's still a team in multiple areas that, you know, isn't really close to championship caliber, still has time and room to get there, but, you know, it's got to start really soon.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give Ryer on YouTube a like and a subscribe. Let's hit the SEC this past week really quickly, Travis, before we get out of here. Tennessee, the aforementioned Volunteers escape Florida 23-17 in overtime. That one goes. Florida's defense shut Tennessee out in Knoxville in the first half. Zip. Nothing points-wise.
And that gives you some hope if you're Alabama, because Florida's defense for about the last season and a half, the two seasons, has been horrific.
Yeah,
I mean, terrible in every area. So, you know, you can't be overconfident if you're Alabama, because as I said earlier, Tennessee might be looking at you like, hey, we're going to get well against these guys.
Right.
But there's enough on tape in the three conference games for Tennessee to this point to feel like if you're Alabama, you should be able to affect Nico and maybe slow down that offense.
The Red River rivalry, Texas blows out Oklahoma 34-3. The final score there, OU hung early. Texas blows it out late. LSU, another overtime game, Travis. Garrett Nussmeier gets it done with some late heroics. LSU knocks off Ole Miss 29-26. Second loss of the season for Lane Kiffin. Vanderbilt 20-13 over Kentucky. So back-to-back SEC wins for the Commodores, first time since 2022 that Vanderbilt has won back-to-back SEC games. And finally, the Georgia Bulldogs, 41-31. Didn't expect to see MSU putting up 31 on that Georgia defense, but they darn sure did. Kirby Smart in the news, Travis, after that one as well, with a shove of the Michael Van Buren kid, the quarterback from Mississippi State. I'm not sure if you saw that highlight or not. If you were on your phone at all over the weekend, you probably
did. Oh, yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
But I was kind of expecting to hear something from somebody on that today. Maybe it'll happen tomorrow. What'd you make of that?
That was interesting. I mean, Kirby's an energy dude, though, right? I mean, Kirby's really why there was a Scott Cochran get back guy at Alabama to start with, you know, right, during his days under Nick Saban. But it was a tough look. I think we have enough of a sample size with Kirby, though, to think that there's reason to believe it was totally unintended, but it still didn't look good. I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about that. It wasn't to the extent of Woody Hayes in the Gator Bowl from our youth.
No. Charlie Bowman.
Yeah, gave him a nice right hook, Woody yeah did. And that was it for Woodrow as the yeah head coach of the Buckeyes. But
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Travis, I believe it took a full week to dismiss Woody over that. If it had happened today, it wouldn't have taken 5 seconds. He was fired before he left the stadium.
Woody wouldn't have been on the plane. No. And Woody was the man, no doubt about that. But yeah, it was a tough look for Georgia in a couple different ways.
I thought it was tough. Yeah,
true freshman quarterback for Mississippi State. Kirby doesn't like that at all, you know, on the defensive side.
And I don't think it was malicious, but I will say this. I don't think Kirby helped himself after the game by saying, I don't remember it. I don't remember it, he said. What?
Well, yeah. Well, somebody's got to tell you before you step up there. Hey, coach, you're about to get hit. This stuff's all over the internet. But no, it was a tough look, but you know, we'll see about Georgia coming up this week. They got an interesting little road trip.
Yes. Yes, no doubt about it. That is going to do it for the Talking Tide podcast here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, traveling abroad, I am Chase Goodbread, not traveling abroad here in Tuscaloosa. We will catch you next time right here on Talking Tide.